are.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, former local congressman Mark Molinaro is going to head off the Federal Transit Administration, at least it seems that way. Sullivan County grand jury has indicted a woman in conjunction with the death of a two-year-old last year. And Newburgh Schools has suspended its superintendent, pending an investigation. All of these stories and more are coming to us from the Times Union, and for that, to go over them, we turn to Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley Bureau. Philip, welcome back to the Local Edition.
Good to be with you.
Before we get into any of those stories I just mentioned, actually every episode of the Local Edition so far this week has been about local and regional action and reaction to efforts of the Trump administration. One of the stories we keep coming back to is what's the situation with deporting migrants, which has been a much celebrated effort from the Trump administration. And you've got a story, I think it just came out today, about an ICE raid coming actually to the Catskills in Greene County. Is that right?
Yeah, so this is something that we were able to confirm occurred on Tuesday in the town of Caro, up kind of in northern Greene County. Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, ICE, conducted a worksite operation there on Tuesday morning, during which they detained two individuals. And we were able to confirm this with an immigrant advocacy nonprofit called the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement that does a lot of work with immigrants who are essentially waiting for asylum or refugee hearings here in the United States. It provides like legal services and other sort of connective services to get them settled in their communities. There's not a lot we actually know about what actually happened. The ICE did not get back to us. The Greene County Sheriff's Office wouldn't confirm anything, and Columbia County Sanctuary Movement itself didn't want to share too much information for fear of shining a spotlight on this place for better or worse. But what we do know is that the enforcement took place sometime between 6 and 8 a.m. on Tuesday, and they were tipped off by the wife of one of the people who was arrested. He had called his wife during the operation and said what was going on, and then she then reported it to the nonprofit group. And, of course, it comes amid a pretty dramatic ramp up this week in ICE actions across the United States. That agency has taken to sharing on social media what it's doing every day. They reported on Wednesday that they had made 1,016 arrests. By comparison, the daily average under former President Joe Biden during his final year in office was 310. So more than three times as many arrests.
And I'm just giving people a heads up about the geography of the area that we're talking about. Caro is there in Greene County. It's about 7 miles from the Hudson River, and right across from the river, that's where Columbia County is. And is there anything else you could tell me about this nonprofit and what they do?
Just kind of what I said already. They help migrants with stuff having to do with getting resettled, essentially. So extension services, legal services, translation, food and supplies if they need. Maria Silva, who reported this story for us, she spoke to their director, who said that the community is, quote, absolutely terrified in response to this. And I do think it, there's a kind of larger point here to make about that atmosphere of terror, I think. I think what we've seen so far in the first, 8-9 days of the Trump administration, they've been pretty open about this as a sort of flood the zone tactic. They're trying a lot of stuff at once with the stated aim of overwhelming any resistance they might meet. And, you know, some things are going to get rolled back or pared back. We've already seen that with the freeze on federal funding that happened earlier this week. But I think, too, you know, something I've been seeing a lot on social media and that these advocacy groups tell us is actually kind of a problem for them is a lot of sort of mis and disinformation being spread about immigration enforcement actions. You know, there have been a lot of people who've said that, oh, you know, they heard third hand that ICE is going here or going there, and they'll share that on Instagram or elsewhere on social media, and that'll spread like wildfire. And that really can overwhelm the groups who are trying to make sure that people's rights are being respected. You know, it's not illegal to be in the United States undocumented. If you're waiting for an asylum hearing. You know, I think what happened in this case, which is that somebody heard what was going on and alerted one of the groups who could provide support, I think is probably a better way of handling these things. I understand, you know, half the country is, I think, scared of some of these actions, but we don't want to add to the feeling of chaos.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is you say there's a lot of disinformation out there. We are in the business of providing information. Yet it's tough for us because just as those organizations, just as the disinformation might make more work for the organizations that are on the ground, from our perspective, as we try to report on this and clarify, and please let me know if you've encountered this at all, but we're starting to hear from some of the organizations that are on the ground where we can't get many details from them about what they're doing because of how they're trying to do the work they're doing, and they don't want to be drawing attention to themselves. You kind of said there was something similar going on about trying to find information about that story. So we're stuck with two things in our position, which is, you know, having to spend the time to kind of track down all of these false alarms to see if there's something behind them, but then also running into the trouble of having difficulty of getting actual information because the people that would know aren't necessarily going to, you know, come on and talk to the radio, on the radio, for example. Are you encountering that in other areas besides what you already mentioned for this story?
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's, you know, just sort of zooming out, even there's like this larger conversation that we've been having in our newsroom about how to even cover some of this stuff. You know, it's we didn't under President Biden cover every single ICE raid that was happening, and I don't think we're going to do that under President Trump as well. We also, you know, due to the lack of information we have about this specific event, it's hard to say exactly that it is, for example, even a raid. You know, a raid implies a pretty strong show of force. We don't really know if that's exactly what happened here. We don't know if, for example, the owner of this work site let the ICE agents in or if they had to sort of come in with a show of force. We also don't know that this was something that was happening because of the ramp up in enforcement actions that we've seen this week. Or if that's just the context in which it's happening, right? Like, clearly there have been more arrests this week than what was the average under President Joe Biden, but it's not like there were no arrests. And in fact, you know, so it just makes things a little bit complicated. And I think, you know, we tried to frame our story in the larger context of this kind of ramp up in enforcement actions that are happening and in what people can do basically to try to not spread misinformation.
Now, part of what you just said there also, it was echoed by New York Governor Kathy Hochul earlier this week, who as part of her response to some of these raids said, you know, especially the one that happened in New York City that was publicized by a new Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem. The governor's basically like, well, you know, ICE does conduct raids in New York State. That's not new. And that was part of the reminder that she gave to people, among other things. that she said. But on in terms of coverage, like you're right, you didn't cover this story as much under President Biden. But, you know, President Biden didn't make this as much a part of their public, his administration's public campaign. Whereas, you know, something like student loan forgiveness that they did make a big deal out of that, if that was impacting local people, you would have been, you know, covering that. You know, so there's that side of it too. But yeah, I think this just us, normally we don't get on air and talk about, you know, the work that we're doing because the work we're doing is the news, is about getting news. The news shouldn't be about the work that we're doing. But Americans across the country this week have been doing this in all sorts of walks of life, having to have extra meetings to say, how do we deal with the potential lack of funding or this potential disruption over here? Or if this now changes in our community, or if there's ICE coming in and disrupting things in this organization or that organization, I think millions of Americans were put into that position this week of just saying, oh, well, where are we now? What's actually going on? So we're all kind of adjusting to a new normal, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and on that point, like, you know, we also had a story out of Albany today that the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants, which is a federally funded program that works with refugees and immigrants, they have an Albany office. They told us that the 146 refugees that they're currently working with, they have lost their federal funding as a result of some of the executive actions that President Trump issued this week.
Okay, moving on to our next story, and this is a follow-up on some of the tragic news that come out of Sullivan County last couple of years where very young people were dying tragically. And this is an indictment in the case about the two-year-old who was left in a hot car and died in Monticello. Is that right?
Yeah, so this is a story I've talked about a few times before, but just to remind people, last summer, a two-year-old named Antonio Suarez Ware was left in a hot car for several hours in the village of Monticello. It was above 90 degrees that day, and he was later found dead. And the woman who was arrested and charged in that case is the daughter of that kid's foster mother. So that kid and his brother were in the foster care system. And, right. You know, the reason this has been such a big story is we've talked about some of the issues that have cropped up in Sullivan County Department of Social Services and Child Protective Services in recent years. There was, another kind of notorious infant death the previous year, accidental fentanyl overdose that prompted a major review. The news this week simply is that a Sullivan County grand jury handed up an indictment charging that woman in connection with this death. She was already arrested last summer and remains in custody.
Now, is this Sarah Carter, this woman who was indicted? This was a member of the family. Is this a member of the family, or is this somebody who was involved with Child Protective Services?
This is a member of the foster family. So she is the daughter of the foster mom who had custody of Antonio, who's the 2-year-old who died, and Antonio's brother, who has since been removed from that care. And it sounds like what happened here is that so the foster mom and her daughter lived in the same apartment complex. And I think the foster mother either didn't have reliable access to a vehicle or just relied on her daughter to run errands around town and just kind of help her out. And Maria Silva, who wrote the story as well, had previously reported a story, I think that came out just earlier this month, when the State Office of Children and Family Services released its investigative report into this death. And that report includes some surveillance video essentially showing what happened, which is that Sarah Carter, the daughter, had taken several children, including Antonio and his brother, and I think her own children, out of the apartment. They went on an errand. They came back, and she got all of them out of the car, but forgot him, left him in the car. And then he was just there, I think, for more than 4 hours. So, you know, it's I think, a story of someone who is clearly either overwhelmed or distracted. Maria has previously reported that there were some red flags in this particular case. There was the boy's birth aunt and a caseworker had reported some bruising and other signs of lack of care on the boys when they had visitation with their parents. And Sarah Carter herself has a previous allegation of child negligence, I think it is, that the Office of Children and Family Services was not able to substantiate.
Okay, well, thank you for giving us that update. This is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and tonight I'm talking to Philip Pantuso live from the Times Union. And these stories are up at timesunion.com. Next story, Philip, this is one that I've been hearing about for a couple days. And every time I hear about this story, there's always like a caveat or, you know, a little caution with it. So I'm hoping you could clarify me where we are this, because I keep hearing that former congressman for New York's 19th congressional district, Mark Molinaro, that district included most of the Radio Catskill listening area. Mark Molinaro is no longer a congressman, lost to Josh Riley, but is being tapped to lead the Federal Transit Administration. What do we know and what don't we know about this?
So what we know officially is that President Trump is expected to nominate former Congressman Molinaro to lead the Federal Transit Administration. And that would be subject to Senate approval because it's a federal agency. Trump has not officially nominated him yet, which he needs to do as a sort of first step to get the ball rolling on that nomination process, nor has former Congressman Molinaro actually confirmed that himself. I do think it's notable that just last week, Molinaro, who's been a vocal opponent of the congestion pricing program in Manhattan, which would rely on funding from the Federal Transit Administration, he did a pretty long tweet thread talking about all the issues or some of the issues with that program, and also some of the other ways that the MTA, Metropolitan Transportation Authority, oversees spending for projects. So those things would be directly in his purview if he were to lead the Federal Transit Administration. But yeah, at the moment, this is just something that we have got confirmed by a couple of sources with knowledge of the discussions, but it's not officially moving forward yet.
Okay, well, that does explain to me, you know, what do we know, what do we not know, and how do we not know it? I guess the next question is, when do you think we might have some more certainty on this?
I mean, who knows? If I could tell you when the president is going to announce things, then that would be great. But he seems to do things at his own whim, so it could happen in 5 minutes. It might be sometime next week. I would guess, though, that they would like to move pretty quickly on it. They're, you know, trying to get through a lot of the other nominees for federal agencies right now, including Hudson Valley Owns Robert F. Kennedy this week. And just today, the New York Times is reporting that the Trump administration is weighing a move to halt the congestion pricing program into New York City, which, of course, got started just last month after several delays.
Okay, and I'm doing my own investigative reporting right now. Even while we're talking, I finally got logged into Facebook, went to Mark Molinaro's page, and I don't see any posts more recent than January 15th, and that post was not about this topic, so no word there either. That's crack investigative journalism for you right there, live on the radio. Finally, Philip, you got a story about the school superintendent in Newburgh being suspended. I don't want to make light of this, but often you hear about principals or superintendents suspending students. Here's a superintendent that has been suspended pending an investigation. What's this about and how serious is it?
This is another one where there's a little bit of mystery. So this happened on Monday night. The school board in Newburgh voted 5-4 to suspend the superintendent. pending an investigation, but they won't actually say what this investigation is about. It could be about any number of things. It's probably related, though, to an audit that was conducted by an outside consulting firm, which studied the district's budget from last year. And it found some significant sort of errors or red flags in the books, including changes to accounting records to show correct fund balances, that financial reports were not submitted on time to the education department, and that the money in a surplus fund exceeded what the state limits are. In response to that audit coming out, the superintendent, whose name is Jacqueline Manning Campbell, issued a statement essentially defending the district's financial processes. It's probably worth zooming out here. We don't have time to get into all of this, I'm sure, but the Newburgh School Board has been deeply divided and pretty fractious for several years now. It's a pretty political body, and the two factions sort of vote in a block. After this story came out, the school board had its regularly scheduled meeting on Tuesday, which devolved into a crazy shouting match. There was a huge public turnout. Some people coming out to support the superintendent, who has called this a witch hunt. Others coming out to say that like everything is being run crookedly and they need to change everything at the school board. Last year, I think 4 members resigned in protest. In mass, we'll have another story about all of this that'll be out tomorrow morning for people who really want to get into the inner political workings of the Newburgh School Board.
Yeah, and I just want to let the listener know here real quick about, like, we're talking about the Newburgh Enlarged City School District, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, and I'm just doing, again, some more research live online, but from what I'm seeing is this school district has about 13 schools, and I'm just saying that because a lot of the schools around here, you might have an entire school district enclosed in one building for some of our smaller central schools, or just 2 or 3 schools in the district. This is pretty serious because, you know, Newburgh's a small city, and they've got like 13 schools in this district.
Yeah, the district is the district includes schools that are, I think, outside the city limits, the city proper limits. I think that's why they technically call it the enlarged school district. But yeah, I mean, it's one of the more powerful, the superintendent of that district is one of the more powerful educational positions you can hold in the Mid-Hudson Valley. And yeah, you know, like I said, there's been a lot of sort of infighting and divisions there. Manning Campbell's predecessor was ousted in, I think it was 2021, after some accusations of sexual harassment, which there are some members of the school board who have defended him about that as well. So this tension goes back, you know, 5-6 years, and doesn't seem to be getting better anytime soon.
Okay. Well, thank you for going over that. And as I've said before, that story and all the stories we talk about are up now at timesunion.com from the Hudson Valley Bureau. We'll be talking to Philip Pantuso. Philip, thank you so much for being here with us.
You got it. Take care.
We're going to take a quick break, and we come back. The wildfires in L.A. and in California are putting local folks in mind of the fires that took place here not too long ago, just the end of last year. That story when we come back.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year. NACL.org.
His work has been to sow distrust in these federal agencies, and now he is poised to oversee the very agencies that he is telling Americans do not deserve their trust.
I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
And of course, that's coming up in just 6 minutes right here on Radio Catskill. For now, we have one more story left on the local edition. I'm Jason Dole, and the devastating wildfires in Los Angeles are prompting officials in New York's Orange County to reflect on their own disaster response strategies. WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Jesse King reports.
Orange County Emergency Services Commissioner Peter Sirigliano was the main guest at a Tuesday roundtable hosted by the World Care Center. Sirigliano helped lead efforts to combat the Jennings Creek Fire, which killed a state parks employee and burned more than 5,300 acres between New York and New Jersey in November. While no buildings were burned, some residents of Greenwood Lake were urged to evacuate, and the fire took 2 weeks to put out.
You can't get complacent. And you can't underestimate the wildfires. And they call them wild for a reason.
The average annual number and size of wildfires nationwide appears to have risen since the 1980s, according to data from the National Intra-Agency Fire Center. The Jennings Creek Fire was one of several fires to break out across the Northeast in November due to drought conditions, high winds, and abnormally high temperatures. In California, the Palisades and Eaton fires have burned more than 37,000 acres, killing more than 25 people and destroying thousands of homes. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Prevention says the fires are now nearly contained.
Happy Friday, Orange County. This is your county exec, Steve Newhouse, today. So obviously I'm not in Kansas anymore. I'm out in the west. In the Pacific.
Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse, a commander with the New York Naval Militia's Northern Command, went west with his unit to support containment efforts earlier this month. Speaking with WAMC, the Republican says he saw some similarities with the Jennings Creek fire, especially in how wind spread the flames. But he was struck by the scale of the L.A. fires.
Everybody in this country, including us on the East Coast, the federal government is going to have to work with California to help rebuild, because the impacts on the insurance rates are going to impact people on the East Coast. The increase of homelessness is going to impact the federal dollar. So this is going to have a very wide-reaching impact on United States residents from either sea.
President Trump has suggested overhauling or even getting rid of FEMA in his first days in office, suggesting state governments should handle their own disasters. The president has signed an executive order creating a task force to review FEMA. Sirigliano says there are a lot of things that first responders need to juggle at the scene of a fire. He says the terrain of the Jennings Creek fire was difficult for firefighters to navigate as they brought in water and dug fire lines. When an 18-year-old parks aide was killed by a falling tree early in the blaze, Sirigliano says response efforts stalled. He had no idea what caused the fire, so he needed to record the scene in case it turned out to be arson.
The operation was paralyzed. The incident commander that was operating on the hill at the time had to come down. You were talking about trauma, right? To everybody that witnessed this incident, the whole operation was paralyzed.
The cause of the fire is still under investigation. Sirigliano says containing the fire took a lot of volunteers and cooperation from state and federal officials. Many local businesses chipped in with food and other donations for the command center. Going forward, Sirigliano says he wants to connect more with volunteer organizations before an emergency arrives.
There are other organizations, other volunteer organizations that I have developed a good relationship with, which makes it that much more seamless when you need them. You know, I know exactly what their function is. I know exactly what they can do, what capabilities they have, and how they can assist me. It's very hard to get that information when you're operating in the heat of the moment.
Sirigliano says his biggest takeaway was the importance of communicating with the public. He says officials had to be on the same page about what their message was and how often they would update residents to minimize confusion and panic. He says that messaging continues with reminding residents to keep a go bag ready for emergencies and to keep their yards clear of any dry debris.
All these natural disasters have common elements, and a lot of it is always geared towards communication. And when you have a lack of communication, it leads in a huge disaster. Now, you already have a natural disaster, and then you have a public perception disaster, which is sometimes worse.
Reporting for WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Jesse King.
Thank you to Jesse King and the New York Public News Network for that report. Thank you for listening. That's going to do it for the local edition tonight. I'm Jason Dole. Local Edition will be back at 6 p.m. tomorrow night. Patricio Rabaya will be your host. We'll get you more news and local conversations. Don't forget, more local news and conversations are on their way to you tomorrow morning at 10. with Radio Chatskill. Tim Bruno, don't miss that show. Full hour of local news and conversations, including our weekly sit-down session live and in person with Dan Hoost, Sullivan County Government. Get the latest from him. It's 10 o'clock tomorrow. For now, ahead of our great local music shows that start at 7, we have The Daily. Stay with us. This is Radio.